Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew. And together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are. And it is Season 5, Episode 8.
Indeed it is.
And our topic is, Drew... I mean, what could it be?
Yeah. Why did we delay this recording a week? Why are we a week late this week? What possible reason could there be? We have been to see Avengers Endgame, which, if you didn't know about it, it came out last weekend, if you've not heard about that. and we went to see it. Well, it came out on the Thursday. We went to see it on Saturday morning, was it?
Yeah.
And, yeah, we had some thoughts about it afterwards, which we will now tell you in podcast format.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard about Avengers Endgame, I don't know why you're here listening to this podcast, because it's the sort of thing we cover quite a lot. So,
I'm glad we haven't missed many big tentpole Marvel movies in the last year and a half, have we?
No, not really. Yeah. And the TV shows, most of the TV shows as well. So. Yep. Big into the Marvel. So just before we start, I just want to do a little tribute to John Singleton, who died today. He'd been on life support for a while. I thought he died yesterday, but that was like a false headline. So if you don't know, he's most famous for Boys in the Hood. He also did the Remember the Time video for Michael Jackson. He's just a titan of cinema, particularly for black filmmakers. And he's the youngest person to ever get nominated for Best Director Oscar. He was also the first black film director to get nominated for Best Director. So if you haven't seen any of his films, have a tribute to John Singleton this week. Because he's fantastic and kicked down a lot of doors.
Yeah, we should definitely do that, because we were talking about this before the podcast, and I actually haven't seen Boys in the Hood, so maybe we should do that as an evening.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Cool. So, on to happier things. Well, almost, yeah, sort of bittersweet things in the Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. So I guess, should we start with our overall thumbs up, thumbs down type thing?
I just want to say, in case we accidentally let something slip before we say it, this is going to be a spoiler-filled podcast. We're not doing a halfway through the thing. We're not going to put down a spoiler wall. We're just going to be talking about it openly from the beginning. Because is there really anybody who's going to be listening to this podcast for our opinions before they go and see Endgame?
Yeah.
It seems kind of unlikely.
Yeah, so, and there's just so many threads now that pretty much from the beginning there's nothing you can't spoiler, really, because it's leading on from one film, and it's leading on from whatever
22 different films,
right? Exactly. So we're going all out on this one. So good call. So well, my first impressions was I really enjoyed it. It's maybe not my favorite. It's not the best one of all the MCU films, but they did a really good job. They did everything they needed to do, and there were just like great moments, and it hit all the beats it needed to do. You know, I laughed, I cried, I cheered, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I'm on exactly the same page. There are certainly Marvel films I've enjoyed more, and been just more personally, just they've appealed to me. I think this one was definitely the most fantastically impressive in the scope of what it was undertaking and the extent to which it achieved that.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily make it the film that I'm going to return to all the time, but it's just, it for what it is, and what it is the big, climax and ending of the entire kind of Marvel franchise up to this point. It's amazing that they achieved it as
really
successfully
is.
As they did.
Yeah, it really is. It is a feat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I keep thinking about it, because it was like, and it was shot back to back with Infinity War as well, which was also an incredibly good film. And just as a creative project, how does this happen? All of the stuff that they've included, all of the actors that they got in there, they're just taking that story and compressing it down to an ending that is satisfying is just... How does that even happen?
I don't know. Yeah, with the amount of people... I don't know. Mm. A lot of planning. I don't know. I don't know. Because, yeah, it's the way they tied everything together and tied everyone in is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. And in a way that doesn't require you necessarily to have a huge knowledge of what's gone before. There are a few things that you do need to know that, you know, if you've missed... Like, if anyone's missed... The Winter Soldier, Captain America 2, like, Bucky Barnes is a really kind of weird, out-of-place character, and you're not quite sure what he's doing anywhere. But, like, that is the one exception. There is a surprising amount of focus for him for a guy who's been basically in 1.5 films. But, otherwise it's really kind of impressive how little you need to know.
It is true, yeah. That is true, considering...
You should perhaps see Infinity War before you see this one, I will say. That's the one film you do probably have to see.
Yeah.
And
I suppose the Avengers films. You could probably get away with just seeing all of the Avengers films.
Yeah, perhaps. Like, I'm not saying, you know, you could go into this one absolutely dry.
No,
But you know, it expects you to have, like, a passing familiarity. It expects you to have seen enough Marvel films to know what this is generally about.
Yeah.
And it does that really well.
I haven't seen them all. So, so I was confused at some things. Yeah, because I haven't seen Ant-Man. And I was never interested. He was, like, my least favorite Avenger. So I didn't even know he was called Scott Lang. So I was just like, who the heck is Scott Lang? I'm confused. Who's Scott Lang? It's like, it's him. I'm like, oh, right.
Yeah. You also forgot Hawkeye's name at one point. They kept referring to Barton, and you're like, who's that?
Yeah, I was like, who the frick is this? Like, why is everybody referring to... It's like, it's like when Peter Parker saying, oh, we're using our fake names. It's like, everyone was using their real names for some weird reason. I suppose it's because they're friends and stuff, but... So I guess we'll get into it.
Where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the characters or the plot?
Probably the plot.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
The very... sort of top level plot is they want to undo the end of Infinity War, which requires, you know, getting the Infinity Stones back and trying to unsnap the snap or do a different snap. So that's basically the quest.
So essentially, it's kind of an interesting. I was worried about when they started talking about time travel. So, like, that's always a worrying moment in any film because as soon as you introduce time travel, it's the same as introducing, like, character resurrection. Nothing really matters anymore because you can go and go back and just change it, and that's fine. But they do it in a kind of interesting way in Endgame in that they're not changing the past. They're going back to do specific things in the past that specifically don't change the past, by which I mean sort of they take the Infinity Stones away and then put them back later on so that they can just use them from their different timelines. So it's not actually the same as going back and undoing it. So they call it a time heist rather than a, like, time travel fix.
Yeah.
They can't go back and just, you know, kill Thanos when he was a baby, which is something they directly address in the film.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah. So that's kind of the structure of it, is that the first act is... Well, it's a lot sort of concerned with showing you what the world is like after the Thanos snap, and it's very kind of... It's a very desolate and quiet place. It's not necessarily unpleasant to live in. We were talking about this after the film, and it didn't look that bad.
It got me wondering. I was like, Well, I wonder what would happen if we've lost half. I mean, I'm not planning anything, but
No.
if we lost half of the population, and there was like rubbish building up and stuff, and I was like, well, actually, like the traffic would be like really low, could
Yeah.
solve our sort of a lot of pollution problems and stuff. And I was like, would like the rubbish really build up that much? Because half the people. There'd be half as much rubbish. So,
Yeah.
and yeah, so just like practically,
Yeah.
it
I
doesn't
mean,
seem that bad. It all seemed really peaceful.
yeah. I mean, it sucks for the 50% of people who didn't get to see it, but for the rest of them, yeah,
Yeah,
it's okay.
it's
You,
kind of
like,
cool.
yeah. You do end up wondering if there would be people who didn't want to go back.
Yeah.
Like that's not something that's really touched upon in the film. They decide, okay, we've got to undo this, and rightfully so. But
Yeah.
you do wonder if there would have been, a component of people who are saying, well, actually, this has fixed a lot of the problems that
Yeah,
we
my
had.
life's better. Well, I suppose Tony has that moment, doesn't he? He has that conflict. So he's the only
Yes.
one that addresses that really, because he's married to Pepper and they have a daughter and he lives in a cabin on the edge of a lake, because of course he does. Because that's the sign of a billionaire who's now not sort of money hungry and self-serving is they move to a cabin. They move from like concrete and glass buildings in the city to a cabin. It means he's sort of he's having a really happy life and he's a good, attentive dad and they have a nice time. So yeah, he is like, well, I could lose all of this. If this goes wrong, I lose this. Which is.
So, yeah, that perfectly, suited to Tony. Is even in that situation, it is still always about his own kind of security and
Right,
self-interest
right.
and happiness.
Yeah, because even though it means he's not self-serving and money hungry, he's still self-concerned in a different way.
So then, the kind of catalyst that kicks off the next, so the time travel plot is that Ant-Man comes back from, if you saw the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp, he ventured into the quantum realm, and then the Thanos snap took Hope Van Dyne and Michael Douglas's character, whose name escapes me for the second, Hank Pym, and he's been stuck in the quantum realm ever since. And it's been 5 years on the outside, but he was only in there for 5 hours, so he theorizes that you could use the quantum realm to time travel, which is a slightly, but that's forgivable, I guess.
Yeah.
And so that's it. That's kind of the first act of the film, is building up to the point where they feel they're able to do this, and that involves getting Stark on board, bringing in some of the previous Avengers. I mean, Thor turns up, Rocket and the Guardians of the Galaxy turn up. They all get together, they build this time machine, and they decide to go back and get the Infinity Stones from each timeline where they're easy to pick up. And put them together, undo the snap, then put the stones back, which makes up the execution of which makes up the second act of the film.
Yeah. And then Act Three is big ass battle.
Yeah, that is a it is a big ass battle.
It really is.
Big is not a sufficient word to describe it, I don't think. It
No.
it's absolutely fucking massive.
It is
Everyone you've ever
enormous.
seen
Yeah.
in yeah.
It's like one of the Marvel team-up posters where it's just like epic, where it's just like all the heroes versus the other heroes. So it's like West Coast versus East Coast type thing. It's like those posters you have when you're a kid and it's like pulls out the comic. It is that basically, but
Except
like
they're all
more.
there and played by massive big name actors who God knows how
Yeah.
they got everyone together and paid enough money to have them all appear. Like, obviously it was all done on green screen
Yeah, so I
of
guess they could
various
break
places and
them up.
times.
Yeah, like, and different sort of directors, I suppose, on like how many stages did they have for this film? Like filming stages. I mean,
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah, it'd be quite cool to see what the extras are on
Like I
the Blu-ray.
they could make like a 10-hour making of thing on this, and I still don't think I'd have seen enough.
Yeah, it's like the Lord of the Rings films. They had like really, really good extras. I've watched all of those on all of those films because they were just really well done and really interesting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I might do that one and see if they go into all of that, because it would be cool.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so I wanted to touch on the sort of the tone of the film. So the opening is, it's really sad and bleak. So it starts with Hawkeye, who's another of the heroes who, you know, has sort of downsized to a rural idyll. You know, that's the ultimate sign of a retired superhero, isn't it?
Yeah.
So like out on his ranch, you know, with his kids and his wife, so they're having a picnic and there's a baseball mitt and he's teaching his daughter to fire an arrow and all this sort of thing. And then he sort of senses something and then he turns around and his daughter's disappeared. We can see that the sort of dusty, ashy stuff on the wind, and oh god, it was like I was like, oh no, because I wasn't expecting it. I don't know, because I didn't know at what point we were seeing Hawkeye, what point in the timeline. So I didn't know this was pre-snap. And it was really poignant, I thought. It was a really bleak opening. So then he turned around, all his family was gone, and he obviously didn't know what had happened because he's out of touch. And I just thought that was a really great entry point. I mean, I guess it is fridging his wife and children just to get him into the action.
Not the first time that happens in the film, which I think is something we'll discuss later.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it is the first time. Not the only time.
Not the last. Yes. So that gets him in. Then we are in, you know, cold, dark reaches of space, and we're with Tony Stark and, oh, what's her name?
Nebula.
That's it. And Nebula, and so they were the only ones that survived from that encounter with Thanos on whatever the planet was in Infinity War. So they're left on the ship tending with each other, and he's really thin, and they're running out of oxygen and food, and they've developed a relationship. And you know, she gives him the last of the food. It's just really bleak and sad, and he's leaving a recording for Pepper, which is quite a nice way of framing the film as well. They framed it with those recordings, which was quite a neat way of doing it. And so then he's basically dying. And then you see this flickering light on his face, and I was like, oh, is Thor like rocking up? And then I'd forgotten, of course, it's Captain Marvel. So that was a nice entry for her, because she's like got her rainbow lights around her and stuff. They really set the tone. It's like, this is serious shit going down. I liked it. I loved that beginning.
Yeah, I was kind of not disappointed with that scene, but that scene where he's, recording a message into the Iron Man mask for Pepper, it was a big part of the opening marketing. It makes up a lot of the trailer. That's where he is in the trailer, and you're wondering how he gets out of that. And it's kind of disappointing that Captain Marvel just immediately turns up and says, okay, well, I'm taking you home now. Like, I understand the plot reasons for that, and the kind of, you know, you needed to get Tony into the film.
Yeah, and they need to get on with it, really, because it's already 3 hours long.
Exactly. But it was just kind of out of nowhere, and a very simple and easy fix.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I hadn't seen the trailer, so so that scene was completely fresh to me, and I enjoyed it, so yeah. But
yeah,
Yeah, I mean, it is an easy let's have him record a message and it's all really sad and then hooray. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of because she's Superman essentially, isn't she? So mm-hmm. And that's, yeah, a Superman type thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And then it just like gets on with things, so which it has to. I mean, it really
yeah.
can't dilly dally any longer. But I liked it because I felt really it brought me back to the tone of the end of Infinity War. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't start it with a joke, you know, because they usually laugh their way out of sadness, the MCU films. And they didn't do that. They, yeah, basically took me back to that feat. I was back in the zone immediately.
Yeah,
yeah, which was good. So, and then where did we go from then? It was, oh yeah, then it was Ant-Man, which we've sort of discussed.
Well, there's the bit between those two. So after, like, Tony comes back, there's the scene where they go and find Thanos on the planet where he's just been hiding out since then. And he's just kind of, like, hanging out yeah. in a T-shirt. Like, he's just in a tent. He has a T-shirt on, which is the strangest thing. The Avengers show up and say, okay, well, we want the gauntlet now and we're going to undo it. But it turns out that Thanos has already destroyed all the Infinity Stones, which obviously you would. Because he doesn't want it to be undone.
Done, yeah.
And he is then killed quite unceremoniously by Thor.
Oh, yeah, that is, yeah.
Yeah, which is, yeah, like, it's an interesting scene. It's really good the way it's kind of framed so that even when Thor does behead Thanos, it does feel impotent. And, mm-hmm. yeah, it's very well done. It conveys that tone really well.
Yeah, it is. It's quite interesting the way they played with Thor and his sort of his archetype, you know, in terms of his like body image and his feeling of impotence, like you say, that sort of being useful, useless, even though he's, you know, huge and muscly and powerful. And then it's quite interesting the way they played with Thor.
That's something I had a few problems with.
Okay.
Because when we come back to Thor 5 years later, so after this scene there's a 5 years later skip, it's a little while before we come back to Thor, but when we come back to him, he's put on weight, or not put on weight, he's become fat, and he's become kind of comically fat, and yeah. that's the joke.
Yeah, I thought.
And, like, I'm a fat person myself, and mm-hmm. like I didn't feel that the film was being directly mean about
no.
it. But the audience reaction was, you know, haha, he's fat now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the image that it's not very subtly putting forward.
Yeah, it is true that it was, like, a gag. The fatness was a gag, but, yeah, I mean, I was kind of, my reaction to it was that it's kind of dispelling, which I don't know what their intention was, but yeah, you're right. The audience reaction was, ha ha, Thor's fat and, you know, not as hot as he usually is or whatever. Mm. But I thought it was interesting because obviously there is that perpetuating the male ideal of like super muscly and, you know, all these things. So I thought it was kind of like, because he didn't all of a sudden like do a Rocky thing and then like beefcake up again and slim down. No. So that was kind of cool. He just stayed that way and it wasn't a running joke about, you know, he wasn't like wheezing or eating pies or you know, so I thought that was I thought it was quite interesting the way they just had Thor.
It does redeem itself a little bit in that there isn't that thing. He does still at that, and he is still a member of the Avengers.
Exactly.
And, like, there's no kind of the rest of the Avengers aren't making fun of him. There's no point where they sort of call him out for being fat.
At
that point, there's no shaming, but I did feel there was fat shaming going on at the
beginning
when you see him.
Yeah, when he's got no shirt on, and I agree. I agree. Yeah. But yeah, I think the other intention behind it was quite interesting, because that is a problem with comics, that sort of perfect sort of male physique thing, especially MCU, especially like Black Panther. It just got like off the scale ridiculous. And then there was like I thought that the sort of heavy-handed reference to the Big Lebowski.
Oh yeah.
Was, I mean, it was fun because you got that anyway, and I don't think he had to say "Okay, Lebowski."
Yeah,
it's
something I've seen described as the Monopoly guy. Have you ever seen like, I can't remember if it's the first or second Ace Ventura? There's a scene where they have this guy dressed in a monocle and he's bald and he says something very posh and, you know, privileged. And Ace Ventura goes, "Oh, and you must be the Monopoly guy." And it's a really unearned joke because there's a line in the script that says this guy is dressed by like the Monopoly guy.
Yeah.
It's not made. And yeah, so someone on somewhere in the, you know, endgame script, they're saying Thor looks like the Big Lebowski, and then they make that joke. So it's kind of a cheap shot, because it's only there because they wrote it that way.
It's so weird, because I was thinking anyway, because he was playing it, you know, you could see he was playing it that way, and so he didn't need to then, like, actually point at it and label it.
Yes.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Yeah, it's cool up until you point it out, at which point it's like, get over yourself.
Right, and then it's just like, oh, okay, you just ruined that, okay. Let's just move on. But there we go. I guess we're in characters now, aren't we? And
yeah, I guess we seem to be just going through them as they come up.
Yeah. So, I guess the other, like, big character bit is the Tony and Cap, so Iron Man and Cap conflict comes up. I think that came up really, really well, their sort of their broken friendship as a result of Civil War. So when Tony comes back from space, he's really pissed off. He's, you know, he's obviously nearly died, and he's like, you know, I told you we needed to protect Earth with a big thing, but you all said, no, we don't, you're crazy. So he's really pissed off, and he blames Cap, and it's a really powerful scene.
I mean, Cap has a right of reply as well. He said, well, we did try that, and it worked out disastrously.
Yeah, exactly. I like the way that there's no clear right side in that. And yeah, you feel for both of them, and mostly you feel for the friendship. You know, the loss of... Yeah. Well, it's almost not even a friendship, is it? It's
They've always been, like, not necessarily directly antagonistic, but they've always been a power struggle for them for leadership of the Avengers.
So, it's not quite a friendship, but there's something, there. And you feel for the loss of that, basically, as opposed to gunning for one side or the other. You feel for both of them. Yeah. And I just think Chris Evans does such a good job, because Captain America is not my favorite. He's never been my favorite since I was a kid. He's just kind of the boring good one. He's, you know, the sort of Superman type who's just like earnest and good, and but he just does him so well that I just kind of love him.
He makes it interesting, makes it an interesting character without going... So the way that the kind of Ultimate Marvel comic imprint went with this is that they made him less of a stand-up guy. He was a bit more ragged around the edges, and he did occasionally come into punchy conflict with other Avengers, especially the Ant-Man of that universe, who kind of deserved it, but whatever. he manages to maintain that Boy Scout kind of... just noble goodness of Captain America without making it just boring Boy Scout goodness.
He does. I don't know how he does it. There's something. No. He's like furrows his brow. It's like the best brow furrow in the business, basically. Yeah. He's just so good and wholesome looking, and you just can't help melting and being like, Steve Rogers is the best.
And maybe it's just that he's handsome. Maybe that's all it needs to be.
Yeah, no, it's more than that.
Yeah, I know.
But I just really felt for him all the way through, and yeah, for him and Tony, I just wanted, yeah, I was just really gunning for them to find, like, build that bridge again, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. And spoilers, they do.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They manage it. Yeah, because they go to Tony and, you know, and I was like, ooh, that is balls right there. They've just rocked up to Tony's idyllic cabin after he, you know, like, tears out his, you know, his harp thing, basically, his Iron Man light, and in rage and collapses in front of them. And then the next thing, they, like, rock up with Ant-Man to his cabin. I was just like, oh, God, this isn't going to go well. And he's actually quite mellow, isn't he? He's frosty, but mellow. He's like, you can stay for lunch as long as you don't talk shop.
As long as we don't talk shop. Yeah. So which other characters do we need to talk about? Because we've got through about an eighth of the people.
I know. Well, a lot of them don't really have huge stuff going on, do they? No. Well, a lot of them just appear.
Yeah.
Like, you know, pretty much Black Panther, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man got... I guess Spider-Man got quite a lot of screen time and attention in Infinity War, so it was fine that he wasn't in this so much. Yeah. I mean, basically anyone who was killed in the snap did not get a chance to get much screen time, because they're only there in the last kind of third of the film after the snap is undone.
So I guess we should talk about Black Widow.
Yeah. So, at the beginning of the film, Black Widow has basically taken over, like, she is what remains of S.H.I.E.L.D. She is the control center. And, she seems to be doing a really good job of that.
Yeah, like, people are reporting to her, she's keeping a handle on things, and,
Yeah, so we go back to Vormir, which we saw in Infinity War as the place where Thanos kills
Gamora. Where women
die. Yeah, the place where women die to further the stories of men. So we saw Thanos throw Gamora into the big plot annihilator to obtain the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
And then Clint... Hawkeye and Widow visit there also to get the Soul Stone, and they run into Red Skull, who is still there and still not quite being played by Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, that's so weird.
Yeah, it is an odd one. Like, I didn't think it's odd that they recast that character there for that role, because anyone could have been there.
Yeah. I mean, it could have just been a Wraith thing. Why did it have to be Red? Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe there's a reason. I don't know.
It was a nice moment in Infinity War where you're like, huh, didn't expect to see that guy again.
No.
But, still. so this time it's Clint and Natasha on the edge of that cliff, and they have an argument about which one of them should sacrifice themselves to obtain the Soul Stone. And that moment is good. Like, I like that argument.
It is, yeah.
It was cool. And it goes physical. Back and forth several times.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, because, like, she tries to go, and then he, like, stops her and wrests her to the ground, and blah, 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 and the whole thing. Yeah.
And it's kind of by accident in the end that she's the one.
Mm-hmm.
It's they end up in a position where he can't save her anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So he jumps, and then...
She kind of jumps and intercepts.
Yeah, she intercepts, and then, yeah. So anyway, they killed off Black Widow because, you know, there were just too many women in this film.
Yeah. Yeah, just weren't enough men. We didn't think there were enough. Like, and you know, Hawkeye in specific is so important to the Avengers lore that, and is definitely going to have his own series of follow-up films. Yeah. That it was really important that he didn't die.
But
on this
he
spot.
Didn't die. Yeah.
But Widow, for whom everyone has been clamoring for a film since, you know, like Avengers.
Yeah.
She did need to die there.
To die.
So that was
unfathomable
and appropriate.
Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I was just like, so after that happened, I was just sitting for a good while just thinking, fuck you, Marvel. I can't believe you did that.
Yeah, the next few scenes, and the next scene doesn't really make it any better because it's like they collected the five white dude Avengers and had them stand on a pagoda just mourning Black Widow.
Yeah, just looking a bit sad, looking into a pond. Yeah. Being it's that, and it's like, did no one look at the optics of that and think, you know, there are just, we've got a scene full to the brim of white dudes.
Yeah, and it's not as if there aren't any available other characters, like Nebula is there, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
I might be wrong about that. Don Cheadle is hanging around.
Yeah.
They're just not in that scene for Shrug. I don't know.
Right.
It's just really weird.
Yeah, it is. It's just unbelievable. They've just shortchanged Black Widow at every turn in every film.
Yeah.
And I can't believe they killed her. I just can't get over that.
Yeah.
I
came out thinking, well, at least they've continued the theme. Like,
right.
At least, yeah, every film she's been in, it's just been fuck Black Widow, and then, you know, they didn't shy away from that.
No, anything. Right.
It's like, just, yeah, well, now she can die.
Because I suppose it has to be bigger and better this time, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and she's the only person who died. Well, no, there are more deaths at the end. But she's the, like, it's specific and it's really focused on that she can never come back.
Yes.
Like, she's dead forever now.
She is so dead.
Yeah.
Dead.
It's weird to focus on it like that, and also, you know, it's Marvel films. It doesn't have to be true at all.
Yeah. It is, yeah, because they did sort of, like, focus on her body and blood, and it was pretty much identical to the way that Gamora is, like, splayed beautifully with a pool of blood at her head. So it's like, yep, this female character is really dead.
Yeah. But then on the plus side, it meant that Hawkeye survived so that later in the film he could do nothing, wasn't it? I don't think, he doesn't do anything else. I think that's the last of him. Like, his family ring him and they're fine.
And that was, like, so annoying because his, when they don't, you know, they think they fixed it, but they're not sure. And then Bird starts singing and things. And then the phone rings and his wife is phoning him. And I was thinking, see, if he was dead now, that would be much more powerful. And if it was Black Widow holding his phone, looking at his wife ringing him, knowing that they'd fixed it and that he will never know. And, you know, it's just... It's just like, why?
Yeah.
There was just at no point did that make the film better.
No. I mean, sort of post-rationalizing it, like, the conclusion I came to was, like, if they had done that, then Stark's death at the end would have been less impactful because we would have already kind of done it. But that's not enough of a justification. It's just... That's the only reason I can think that they would make one dramatic decision over the other.
Is that... It would... Hawkeye died...
So if Hawkeye dies and his family are... Well, like, the death and family moment is, like, Stark's. Like, it's he dies in front of Pepper. Mm-hmm. So that would... There would be an element of that being lessened if we'd already seen it happen to Hawkeye.
Right, I see,
but
yeah.
It's not a justification for killing Widow.
No. It's not enough, because all it needed to be would be her not knowing what to do. Mm. You know, you wouldn't have to go into it, and then, because they didn't go into it with Black Widow.
No.
She didn't get a funeral or anything.
Well, she did. That's what the white guys on the pagoda scene is. It's them sending her off. Like, it's her memorial. They don't do, like, a burial, but that's the intent of that scene. And,
yeah.
Like, I was distracted as well during that scene. I had to go back and look up what it was about. But, yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. Well, I know that. It's them going, oh, sad face.
Mm.
But, I mean, that's all they needed with Hawkeye. If he'd died, you know, they just needed to have, I don't know, they could have, you know, had it short and without dialogue and done and dusted it, and I think it would have been fine and wouldn't have been taken that much away from Tony Stark.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, I kind of know what you mean, but yeah, I anyway, so I think we could rant about this.
Yeah, like that is the major blemish on what is otherwise kind of generally just a really good film throughout.
Yeah,
it is a big one, and it reverberates for a couple of scenes afterwards where you're like, why did that happen?
Yeah, I was just putting it over in my mind. I was just like, well, why didn't they choose him? I was like playing out all the options.
Yeah.
Of like who could, basically I was distracted by that and just thinking, fuck you, Marvel.
Yeah. Like anyone else would have been fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. But there we go. So who else?
Well, we can talk about Hulk, I guess.
Yes, that's who I was trying to remember.
Yeah. To be fair, he doesn't get a huge amount to do. Like, what he does have is really cool is that he's now kind of fused the Banner and Hulk identities into a smart Hulk who is much more confident and is much more genial. And, like, they combine the two personalities really well.
It is. It's really nice. Yeah. It's cool because we just get more Mark Ruffalo, and Mark Ruffalo's awesome.
Yeah,
and he's just, like, big, and he's all famous, and kids want selfies with him, and yeah, it was just really fun. Instead of, I bet it was kind of a nice release for him to be happy as opposed to angsty as he's always been through the films, and yeah, it just shows his range that he can do both of those really happily.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's just so watchable, Mark Ruffalo. He's absolutely my favorite Banner.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
I like the Edward Norton one. I don't know if I think after all of this, after we've seen like Mark Ruffalo's Hulk throughout this, I'm more attached to Ruffalo's Hulk. But I do like, that's one of my kind of wishes for the Marvel universe, is that I wish we could have seen what an Ed Norton kind of Hulk thing would have been like.
I love Edward Norton, so yeah. I mean, I did like his Banner too, but I liked the vulnerability that Mark Ruffalo brought to it. Yeah, I really like that. And then, of course, there's the fact that they never really address the fact that there was that romance that Joss Whedon started, which I loved. I was so invested in that, and I loved it. And they just killed it.
Yeah.
They just killed it. Yeah. And I'm gutted about that. They just never want... I don't know why they just never wanted to invest in that. Mm. I don't know, again, what that was all about.
I was going to say, that is the tragedy of the MCU Hulk, is that he does have this interesting journey with all these interesting things, but he's in the film so little that it's only ever, like, touched on. So this kind of fusion, it's kind of based on, like, the Professor Hulk comics, where Banner does that in the comics as well. It's really cool that he incorporates him into this one new character who is really interesting and fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you first meet him, he's already done that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's already happened. We haven't seen the journey. We've just had it touched on at various points throughout in like, three films. So it kind of started in Ragnarok. It got a scene in Infinity War, and then got a scene in Endgame. It's just kind of... It's not telling a story so much as telling us that there was a story.
Yeah, it
and
is.
That, it's the same with the relationship.
Yeah. I just wish they'd done something with that relationship. And then at least they could have had some... I mean, he wasn't even that sad about Black Widow. He just said, I miss her.
Yeah.
And that was... Yeah. You know, it's the most sort of emotionally crippled kind of...
I'll always remember what's her name.
Yeah. It was. It's like, what? But you were like totally in love with her. You know, like you were really both having a thing and it was beautiful. And yeah, it just fizzled out. And then they could barely even look each other in the eye. It was, they just didn't deal at all. So that was a bit of a shame. What else? I think, what about, I guess, what's his name? The old guy with the glove. his name
Thanos.
Thanos.
Thanos,
I
yeah,
wasn't
that
joking, that
fella.
wasn't for comic effects. I had forgotten his name.
Okay, fair enough. It's not as if he's been plastered all over the marketing of every Marvel thing for the past 10 years.
I
It's
know, right?
understandable that he would slip your mind. He's got much less of a role in this than he does in Infinity War. But what they do with him, I think, is really good. Whereas Infinity War is all about his journey and his kind of, this is what I want to do and this is why I want to do it. And he doesn't quite get to the point where you sympathize with him, but you understand his reasoning. I like that in this film, when he thinks his plan is going to get interrupted, he reveals himself as like the tyrannical despot that he actually is. Like when he realizes it's not going to work, he says, "Well, then I will just create my own universe and I will be the god of that universe." So it was cool to see all that stuff they built up just kind of fall away when he doesn't get his way.
It is cool. And then, so I suppose he turns up more as his past self, doesn't he? Well, does he?
Yeah, it's his
It's
kind of.
more in the past. So his past self realizes that they're trying to undo what he hasn't done yet because it's past self. So it's more, it goes back to his relationship with his daughters again. And it's more focused on Nebula this time, and that really horrendously abusive relationship that she has with her father. That he's kind of broken down all her ability to connect with people emotionally, and her the time spent with Tony Stark has rebuilt that somewhat. You know, she's able to connect more and, you know, have a relationship with her sister, who she's now lost at the hand of her father. She has quite a nice complex story there, because there's the two sides of herself, that past self who's broken, and the self who, has emotional connections with people and has separated her identity from that of her abusive father. Because she's got real sort of Stockholm syndrome, really, doesn't she?
Absolutely. And there are some, given that there's a lot of time travel and jumping back and forth involved in this film, she gets some really kind of interesting scenes where she sees that, okay, it doesn't have to be like this. She sees the other Nebula and is like, oh, you can see that it's convincing her that maybe she's wrong, which is a really kind of cool sort of slow thing that is laid out over the course of the film.
Yeah, it is. It's yes, a nice character moments for her.
The only problem that I had with it is that she doesn't really get an ending to that. Like, she's not really involved in the final fight with Thanos, and you'd think that she would be. Like, realistically, I find it tough to think of a way that she could have been really that involved, because, like, she is completely outmatched, like Thanos. She is not, like, a top-tier hero. Like, Captain Marvel, for example, has problems fighting Thanos, so you can't expect Nebula to put up a huge fight, but it would have been cool if she was involved more than she was.
Yes, if she'd had some closure with her father. That's true. She just gets the sort of gag with Gamora at the end about Hulk.
Quill.
Yes.
If it was him or the tree.
Yes. So, oh yeah, I suppose we haven't talked about Quill and Rocket.
I guess, do we need to go into those
No,
that
not
deeply?
really.
No,
Quill's kind not Quill, Rocket's kind of, he's buddied up with Thor
yeah.
For this one off the back of Infinity War. So it's quite nice the way they kind of mix up the two teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite good the way they do that so that you get a flavour of each film in different ways. Yeah, there's different buddies. So who is it? It's
And they all tend to
Ant-Man.
work quite well.
Yeah, they do.
Ant-Man and
there was...
Cap.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And then Tony Stark go off to do their heist,
Yeah.
which is good. Which is a good, like, comic moment
Yeah.
as well. So, yeah, it's good.
And they bring back Robert Redford, who played the villain in Captain America 2, which was really good because it just sort of brings you back to that kind of conspiracy theory stuff as well, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I did really like that moment, sorry, just to go on a tangent again, where Cap gets the scepter back in the lift by saying Hail Hydra after that huge kind of mess in the comics last year where there was a huge reaction to him being kind of in an alternate timeline or whatever it was being revealed to have been a Hydra agent. This was a
Oh,
really
really?
nice mirroring of that.
Yeah. And I like that it was that lift scene again as well.
Yes. Because yeah. that's a great scene in the
Oh,
original.
It's such a good scene. That is so great. It just makes me want to go back and watch them all because, I mean,
same.
I haven't seen Iron Man for a gazillion years. So, yeah, I'm just, like, totally in the mood to go back and relive now.
Yeah. Like, that's something I'm really looking forward to in the same way that when I got to the end of Lost, I thought, oh, I can't wait to go back in 10 years and see this from the beginning. Like, I still want that with the MCU now. It'll be interesting to go back through that story from beginning to end.
Yeah, it will. It'll be good. And probably I'd slip Captain Marvel in earlier.
Yeah. I think we did talk about this in our review episode, didn't we? But that needs to be a lot earlier than it was.
Yeah. So, you can make up your own order. And of course, now you don't have to wait 10 years because it has been 10 years.
Yeah, fair enough.
we can do it straight away.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm up for that. So, is there anything else? Is there stuff we haven't covered? I suppose
like
the ending.
I mean, I don't have anything. Yeah, let's talk about the end because,
we
talked about everything else.
Yeah.
I have some other, like, character miscellanea, but we can.
Okay.
We can sort of talk. I think we can talk about that after we talk about the actual ending.
Yeah. They basically. Yeah,
kill Thanos,
just,
and that's it. Yeah, lovely.
epic that. I mean, when it really kicks off is when they. Doctor Strange opens up his like golden portal things, and first Peter Parker or Spider-Man comes and finds Tony, and he's like, yeah, it was really weird, and then we were just there, and then like Doctor Strange, he was sitting down, he went all weird, and then he does that gold spinny thing he does, and then Tony just like hugs it. Oh my god, it was so good. Yeah, it was so good. It brought tears to my eyes. Like I literally cried in bits of this film. It was so good. That was great. So yeah, so Doctor Strange brings up loads of those, and basically Wakanda walks in and Valkyrie. It's just like, it's so good.
it's a massive, really well produced fanfic.
Yeah.
Where just the people you love keep showing up to take part in the big fight.
Oh my god, it's so good.
It's really great, and just amazing in the scope of just the characters that they include, and some of them do only get a little bit of screen time, but it's still like really awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's so cool, and Valkyrie is finally on Pegasus. Thank you, because they hinted at it in Thor Ragnarok, and then like pulled the rug from under me, and I was really pissed off that was just like some weird dream sequence or something.
Yeah.
At last she was. I was disappointed she didn't have Valkyrie behind her though, because in the comics she always had her sort of female warriors behind her, and I thought that would have been cool. I know Asgard's kind of low on numbers, but it's going to be low on numbers if they don't get more women in there. It's a pretty male dominated sort of like Hamlet somewhere in Denmark at the moment. So I think she could have like dredged up some women from somewhere to be shield maidens. I think that would have just like edged it for me, but it was cool. At least she had her winged steed.
She did,
yeah. And she had some nice moment, you know, she had some dialogue scenes and stuff, which was cool. So I don't know if they're gonna do a film with her or bring her back or what. Yeah, I hope so, because she's like one of my favorite characters.
I don't know anything about that one way or the other. I'd imagine that there's certainly going to be more like I imagine Thor's going to turn up in the next Guardian film, so hopefully she'll come alongside.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, it would. She is part of that sort of space MCU, isn't she? So,
yeah.
You know, the outer space ones, the off-planet lot. So it would make sense if she does. I hope so. Because it kind of, she had her bit where he gave her rule of Asgard. Which is kind of cool. So,
yeah.
Maybe that will come back into it somehow. Or maybe in Captain Marvel.
Yep. I would be happy with any of that.
Yeah, that would be cool if she was in a Captain Marvel film. They kind of tied Captain Marvel back down to Earth somehow with Asgard ruled by Valkyrie, the Black Viking. Yes.
I mean, write the script, send him.
I know, right? Wow, that's cool. That would be cool. It was just a big kick-ass battle.
It wasn't
like a mess or anything. It was just big and satisfying.
Yeah, it didn't have to be complex. We weren't waiting. Like, at this point in the film, at this point in the Marvel Universe, we're not looking for the sudden twist ending. This is the big fight between everyone and Thanos.
Yeah.
And they all attack Thanos, and they finally win, just, you know, kind of by the skin of their teeth, but also in a very Tony way. We get to see Thanos die. Which is, like, it's odd because, like, that's not the Thanos that did the actual snap. This is kind of a past Splinter Thanos, and killing him doesn't really affect anything. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't... it stops him doing anything else, but it doesn't affect the past, even though he's from the past.
Yeah.
The time travel in this film is I think just a tiny bit inconsistent. But they do kind of hand wave that early on, and I'm fine to go along with that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too. And then, of course, we get the death of Tony Stark, which is really sad.
I mean, when he died, like, the way they shoot it, I don't know if it was just me or if you had this as well, but I was absolutely expecting him to do the Bill Murray from Zombieland thing, where...
Yes.
Like, he's actually fine that he comes back with the the wisecrack.
Yeah.
Which I would have been equally happy with.
Yeah. I thought that too, because it did linger on him. I was like, he's going to be fine. And then he's not fine. Yeah, it was really sad. But I kind of suspected that Tony Stark was going to go.
Yeah.
Partly for Robert Downey Jr. so he could just have that really clean break.
Yeah.
You know, I did this amazing, like, hugely mass market thing, which, you know, he'd never really did before.
Yeah.
And now my time is done. I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of said, you know, can I die? I mean, it'd be cool if I died.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that. There was no way they could have done that anywhere else. I mean, there were never going to be any more Iron Man films.
No.
There's never going to be any point in him coming for a cameo in a Spider-Man film or anything.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
This is the place to end the character.
Yeah. I suppose they could have had cameos, but, it might have been... Maybe he didn't want that, it's nice... It's not nice to have a death, but, you know, there's, like, some sense of...
an ending.
You know, that, yeah, that circle closing, yeah. That finality, because, you know, this is the end of this cast as we know it, this team up as we know it. So, yeah, it was, yeah, satisfying.
And we get that with Cap as well.
Yes. So that
he gets a really nice, really happy ending.
Yeah.
Kind of good back in time. He puts back all the Infinity Stones. He also puts back Mjolnir, which is something that I didn't quite click with me when I was watching the film, because they took the past version of Mjolnir, and yeah, he takes that back. That's why he doesn't have it.
Yeah.
And then he decides not to come back and lives out the rest of his life with Peggy, which of course he would.
Yes, you totally would. Yeah. It was really nice. It was a good old ending. And then it's just the funeral. So Tony gets the big funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And
Widow, not mentioned.
She gets nothing.
nobody remembers that she's there.
She's not there, yeah. There's no, like, candle lit or anything.
Apart from that, though, it's a really nice moment. It takes the form of they send off the first, like, arc reactor from Iron Man, which in that film kind of Pepper Potts saves it and mounts it in a frame that says proof that Tony Stark has a heart, which is a really nice moment in the in the first film. So it was nice to see that kind of come full circle, and they send that off as representing him. Mm-hmm. And then it's just kind of a slow pen through kind of everyone you would expect to be at Tony Stark's funeral.
Yeah.
Including like Nick Fury, who has done nothing else all film. He's just kind of there.
He was dead.
Yeah, he was dead. You can't blame him.
But everyone's there. It's basically a final call, isn't it? Yeah. A curtain call for everyone. Oh, it was good, though.
It was.
Yeah, and that was it. Endgame. Yeah,
that kind of is it. There's not much else.
No. It's just utterly satisfying.
Yeah. Really. So Thor wanders off with the Guardians.
Oh, I suppose there were the little characters from Ragnarok.
Sorry, say again?
The character from Ragnarok came back.
Which one's that?
The rock guy.
Oh, him, yeah. His name's something like Zorg, or like played by Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
And he's just, again, he shows up and he's very, very funny.
Yeah, he's just funny and nice, yeah.
I could watch a film with, like, I hope he ends up joining the Guardians as well.
Yeah, me too. That would be cool. A good ragtag bag.
Yeah.
That would be good. It'd be almost like an extended Ragnarok then.
Yep.
Yeah, which I'm down for completely. I suppose we haven't talked about Miss Marvel.
Captain Marvel, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's fine, because she doesn't really have a lot to do in this film.
She doesn't, no, which is quite good, because she is, I mean, although she didn't, you know, she couldn't defeat Thanos, she's horrendously overpowered.
Yeah.
So she was off, you know, the way they wrote her out of it was that, you know, the whole rest of the universe has been snapped as well, so... Yeah. You know, have other planets to deal with.
Although it's an excuse that doesn't really hold a lot of water, because everything relevant to that happens on Earth. The snap happens on Earth. When Thanos invades, that happens on Earth. She could have just been hanging around Earth and that would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the Infinity Stones, when they go and get them, three of those are on Earth.
And what is she doing? Like, helping them pick up their rubbish?
Yeah.
Because that's all that went wrong here.
That's all it was. She was picking up their rubbish, organizing, like, self-help groups and therapy groups.
Because Cap had that Fight Club moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of nice. Yeah.
There was an interesting thing in that where... So something that has been sort of mentioned in the advertising for Endgame is that it has Marvel's only kind of gay character, the only explicitly gay character, and he appears in that scene.
Right.
And he has two lines, one of which is kind of a slightly ham-handed, I thought, going out of your way to say this character is gay in a way that wasn't quite... Like, it wasn't unnatural, but it did feel like the dialogue had to take a turn to get there. Mm-hmm. And then he's not in the film anymore.
Right. Yeah, so it weird inclusion.
Yes. It was an inclusion that was so conspicuous that it felt like it was just done for the sake of saying, now we've included it.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't buy it as actual inclusion.
No, not at all. Because it wasn't any of the sort of, like, main named characters.
No.
Yeah, it was very weird. I was like, oh, okay, fine, but yeah. It was weird. But I did like the way that they tackled some of the masculinity things. So, you know, Cap was in his self-help group and you know, Tony is, you know, like the men are vulnerable.
Yes.
So I thought that was quite nice, the way they introduced that kind of different facets of, you know, not everyone's gruff and like slapping each other on the back and then just punching things. So I like the fact that they introduced shades of masculinity and I thought that was cool. And that's it, really. That'll be that until Spider-Man.
Yeah, which will start the new phase.
Right, yeah, so it never really ends, really.
Yeah, in 10 years we'll be watching Tom Holland die the way Stark did.
Oh my god. Yeah.
I mean, that is kind of one thing that Peter Parker does do a lot. He does tend to die.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He's the most sort of accessible hero, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I felt sad the rest of the day after I'd watched this, because they were just such a great cast. They were just perfect. I can't imagine a different Tony Stark. I mean, of course, there will be, you know, at some point, but he was just so perfect. And like I said, you know, Chris Evans really brought life and depth to Cap and to Steve, you know, the earnestness of Steve Rogers, and and they just seemed to love working together, that cast. You just really felt this big family kind of bond, and it was really lovely. And
I mean, I do always wonder how much of that was genuine and how much of that was marketing, because I can imagine Marvel and Disney having huge control over the appearances and stuff. Like, that's a very pessimistic viewpoint, I understand, but yeah, I've always been slightly suspicious.
I don't know. I mean, stuff I've seen of them that is like beyond Marvel, in between films and stuff, it just seems like they like each other.
Yeah.
So, and
I see that stuff and think, oh, Disney has control of that as well. I see.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay, I'm living in my world because it's slightly nice.
Well, I'm living in my world where we're all going to die when someone snaps a gauntlet. And,
and Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, they're obviously, because he kind of persuaded her to do it in the first place. You know, so they obviously have a relationship beyond that. They've been in films together and stuff. So I believe in those friendships. It works on film, like, whatever the real chemistry is. For me, it feels like authentic, and it's nice to watch. So I'll really miss them, because usually I come out of superhero film going, I wish I was a superhero. Yes, I am like a 10-year-old child.
I mean, I wasn't going to say anything.
But particularly Spider-Man films. Even though Spider-Man's not my favourite, you know, sort of comic book hero, but he is the one I could imagine, like, happening. Mm-hmm. He is the most accessible superhero in terms of, you know, I'm never going to be the Silver Surfer. I have to come to terms with that. I'm not going to have the power cosmic. but I could become Peter Parker. It's possible. So I always come out of Spider-Man thinking, God damn, I wish I was Spider-Man. It'd be so cool. But this one, I came out thinking, I just want to watch them be superheroes again.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss them being together.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely.
yeah, it was cool. So that was Argue the Toss and
Endgame.
Avengers Endgame until the next Marvel thingy-bob.
Yeah.
Last Spider-Man, which isn't that far away, actually, is it?
Yeah.
So,
Isn't it like next month or the month after?
yeah,
Yeah.
probably.
Cool. Well,
Yeah.
look out for that episode.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, let us know what you think. We're on Twitter at ArgueTheCast and GameIndustry.com and all the podcast places you can imagine. So, yeah, give us a, if you liked this episode, please give us a thumbs up or a star or whatever the system is on there. That would be really nice to have that feedback. And that is us, I think.
Yeah.
Until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.